It is Friday, November 22nd, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
On this edition of Ozarks, the Bentonville High School Chamber Choir prepares for their final Madrigal Dinner. And we'll hear a preview from inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
Plus, the holiday lights are turned on in Fayetteville and Bentonville this weekend. And Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers has the details on those and other events worth our attention this last weekend before Thanksgiving.
First, more than 58,000 Arkansans have enrolled for coverage so far through the state's expanded Medicaid program. The Arkansas Department of Human Services says this is more than a quarter of the 250,000 eligible people who can select plans from Health Insurance Marketplace that was established in October. Spokesman Amy Webb says the initial statistics are positive.
We weren't sure how many people to expect, but we're pleased with the pace of enrollment and the number of people who are completing the process or applying for coverage.
Webb says the numbers surprised the department, which expected some hesitancy among consumers.
Initially, this is a very new program, and we know that people may not immediately begin the application and enrollment process. They may want to see how it goes. And so we did not expect to see, you know, huge numbers right off the bat, though we are pleased with the number that we have seen so far.
Coverage for plans sold on the Health Insurance Marketplace will begin January 1st.
Yesterday, we reported the city of Alma was one of several Arkansas counties and cities to receive community development block grants from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. John Ballatine, the mayor of Alma, says the $203,000 the city will receive through the grant will be used to renovate the city's senior center in an attempt to entice more seniors to use the center.
Our building's built in the 80s. When it's bad weather, they have a tendency to not want to come because they get soaking wet trying to pull in there. And so that's one thing we want to try to fix where they can. The ladies can be dropped off without, you know, getting their hair wet and their clothes wet and everything and be crumpled to come on in when the inclement weather. And our seating area and lighting, we're going to put in some skylights and knock out a wall and scoot it back, try to light up the area more. It's a little dark. It's just a dated building with paneling and stuff like that.
Mayor Ballatine says the city's senior center is one of the bigger ones in the county and that the project wouldn't be moving forward if the city had not received the grant.
The Department of Housing and Urban Development has released totals for the 2013 point-in-time estimates for homelessness across the country. Earlier this year, shelters and other homeless service providers across the country conducted a count of homeless people in their areas. For the state of Arkansas, more than 3,800 people were reported as homeless. That's a decrease from the 2012 statewide total of over 4,200 people. However, the 2013 total is only slightly smaller than the number of homeless Arkansans counted in 2007. That was prior to the economic recession that hit its peak in 2008.
The Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics today released statewide jobless numbers for September and October. 7.5% of the Arkansas labor force was unemployed in October, an increase of 0.3% over October of 2012, and an increase of 0.1% from September. However, the state's overall labor force shrank year over year from 1.35 million people in October of 2012 to 1.32 million people last month.
Duck hunting season begins tomorrow in Arkansas. The State Game and Fish Commission says rainy weather this year could increase the population of ducks in the state's wooded regions. Commission spokesman Keith Stevens says better results are achieved when people stay away from frequently hunted areas.
The easiest thing is to find some spots that aren't heavily hunted. And that have a little water in them. The mallards don't need a lot of deep water. So if you can find some of those spots that are out of the way that aren't heavily hunted, you can probably get your limit this weekend.
The season will run through late January.
More than 40,000 students in Northwest Arkansas created art yesterday as part of a national effort. The event was sponsored by Walmart, the Walmart Museum in downtown Bentonville, and the website everyartist.me. Alan Dranow, the director of the Walmart Museum, says all of the art created in Northwest Arkansas yesterday will be scanned and exhibited at locations around the region.
The artwork will then, during the month of December, be installed throughout Northwest Arkansas at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, at the Walton Arts Center along the Razorback Greenway, at the Jones Center for Families in Springdale, at the Walmart Museum on the square in Bentonville, And it'll all culminate in a celebration on January 11th at the Jones Center for Families, where we'll have all of the art in one place.
Each student was asked to use gratitude as their inspiration for art. Nationally, the event was expected to include hundreds of thousands of elementary school students in what organizers hoped would be the largest collaborative art event in history. We'll hear more about the event on an upcoming edition of Ozarks at Large.
The 21st-ranked Razorback swimming and diving team completed its first day of competition yesterday at the Missouri Invitational. The team finished day one as first of 11 teams with a total of 262 points. Competition concludes today in Columbia, Missouri. And the Razorback soccer team will continue its play in the NCAA tournament against St. John's University today. The winner of that match will play the winner of Duke, Florida on Sunday.
Tonight, there's a 60% chance of rain before midnight, then a chance of sleet with lows around 31 in northwest Arkansas, and a 70% chance of rain with lows around 36 in the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly sunny tomorrow with highs from 43 in northwest Arkansas to 48 in the Arkansas River Valley. And partly cloudy tomorrow night with lows from 22 in northwest Arkansas to 29 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and more for the entire listening area. And a pleasant Friday to you, sir.
Good morning. On a chilly Friday, I guess winter is going to make an appearance.
Eventually, yes. And plenty of fog and rain throughout the area this weekend, yep. I think. Home sales heating up, at least the number of homes being sold, or the prices kind of holding steady or dropping a bit.
Yep, they're holding steady. It's we've talked about this before, and we saw it, I think, at the beginning of August with the price trend going lower. We're seeing higher interest rates push that down. Obviously, when the interest rates tick up, that monthly mortgage payment goes up, so it reduces the price of a home that people can afford. But one of the things we're still seeing, and I'll have to admit, I was one of those folks who thought that home sales in Arkansas might slow down in the back half of 2013, and that's just not happening. In fact, the pace is increasing. The number of home sales in the four markets that we track, it's Central Arkansas, Fort Smith area, Northwest Arkansas, and that Jonesboro, Northeast Arkansas area. The home sales in those markets were up a little over 12% in August, and they're up 13.4% in October. So the pace of growth has continued into the back half. However, the value, as you noted, is coming down. The average was about the increase in terms of the total value of sales was up almost 4% in August, but that's down to just a little over 2% in this October report. But look, no one's complaining. The realtors aren't complaining. They're busier than they've been in years. And, you know, this is the one clear bright spot in Arkansas's economy.
Well, then to counter that, the Bologna Index, which was something created by Ken Kupchak at the River Valley Food Bank, shows that there are still some economic hurdles to be taken care of.
Well, and this is the Bologna Sandwich Index, which is interesting. Ken proposed this several years ago, and I first thought he was crazy, but it is. We've continued to write about it. It tracks the number of lunches provided by the SAC Lunch Program at St. John's in downtown Fort Smith, and it uses that and the Sebastian County unemployment rate and the Fort Smith metro rate to kind of predict where the jobless rate is going to go. It's kind of a predictor index. And what we're seeing is that index is up, and it's up to some of the highest levels in 2013. And what this really reflects, Kyle, is just this long-term, persistent unemployment, high unemployment rate in the Fort Smith area. We will see December 9th how the metro rates for September and October change. But, you know, when you've had more than 60 consecutive months of unemployment rate that's been at or above 7%, you know, you end up with people not being able to afford necessities like food, and we see the food banks, even as Ken Kupchick noted, many of the food pantries, as he in his words, are quote starting to buckle. They just can't keep up. So in Fort Smith, even though, for example, the home market is improving in Fort Smith, that region needs to see its jobless rate improve.
Well, of course, as you move into the colder months, then some family budgets can become strained even more.
Yes, trying to keep it warm, and it's going to be a problem, and it's going to be jobs that keep up with it. And one of the other pressures on this is that, you know, we've seen the end of for 2 years there, some of the SNAP benefits, the food stamp program, had provided more. And that was reduced back to pre 2008 levels. You can correct me if that's wrong, but so, you know, the poor have also seen some of their food stamp benefits cut in recent months. So obviously that doesn't help.
I want to talk about three. I think I would call them landmarks in the Fort Smith area: the Atasco Building, Arvest Tower, and Fiona Hills Country Club. All three may see some changes.
Well, the Otasco, as we've known, are the Friedman Mincer Building, which was built in 1911, and there in downtown Fort Smith on the east end of Garrison Avenue, is definitely an iconic building. And Steve Clark, not Steve Clark, the Fayetteville Chamber guy, but Steve Clark, Fort Smith businessman, in fact, he has business operations in Northwest Arkansas as well, is invested in that. And we've written about that before. Progress is moving, and he hopes to be in there. And a lot of folks are hoping that that's a spark. There have been some developments and some improvements to the west end of Garrison Avenue in downtown Fort Smith, and they're hoping that his work, and everybody knows that, you know, and Mr. Clark, he doesn't do anything halfway. So they're hoping that his investment, and this will also bring about 40 jobs from his ProPack Logistics. It'll be his corporate headquarters, so it'll bring those jobs downtown as well. So that'll be good. And then Arvest Tower is, and they won't tell us how much they're investing. Mr. Clark's investing a little over $2 million in his facility, but Arvest is renovating this tower. It's a recent iconic structure. It's about 30 years old, and it just needed a lot of new landscaping. It's got that 1980s. Kind of landscape look, and they're going to
early 1980s at that. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I remember parachute pants. So yeah, those kind of design. Same people thinking that was cool, kind of designed that. But so they're redoing that, painting that. It's going to dress that up very nice, and that's a very high traffic area. It's along Rogers Avenue, so that'll help improve the look of that area. And then the one thing that's driven a lot of traffic for the City Wire this week is this possible more than $7 million investment in Fiona Hills Country Club, and that's over 40 years old, that facility. And frankly, and I don't say this as an insult, I think even some of the members out there would say so, it looks like a funeral parlor. I mean, if you just took a picture of it and said this is a funeral parlor in Tyler, Texas, you'd say, yeah, okay, I agree, that's what it is, that's what it looks like. But Lance Beatty, the and Fort Smith Redevelopment Partners, the people who bought and renovated that Phoenix Village property in Fort Smith when everybody thought they'd lost their mind to even invest in that. You know, that's now home to HMA, Sykes, over 1,200 jobs. So that same company is looking to do some renovation, try to revive Fiona Hills Country Club. It's not a done deal yet, but it's certainly got the town talking.
Well, I guess what's encouraging with all three of those projects is you have people coming in with established resumes in previous similar endeavors.
Yes, that's a great point. This isn't just, you know, some Joe Schmo who thinks he might be able to, you know, put some new lampshades up at Fiona Hills and call it a day. I mean, this, you know, for an example, because what Fort Smith Redevelopment Partners did at Phoenix Village was just completely change the look of the area and take that roughly 35-acre eyesore.
Which had been written off by many people.
Yes, for a long time.
Yeah.
And people even laughed at Lance. I remember we did some stories on it, and people even thought we were naive to write about it because, you know, you can write about it a few times, but it's not going anywhere. Well, it's... And who knows if he may have got lucky or whatever, but, you know, and keep in mind, he did this in 2009, 2009 through 2011, when the economy in the Fort Smith metro area was still hurting. But hopefully he can do the same thing for Fianna. Like I said, Mr. Clark has a great reputation. He's even talking about having a possible microbrewery on the first floor of his building there in downtown Fort Smith. That would be it'd be very nice. And Arvest, they're not going to nickel and dime it. So yes. three good properties being hopefully three if Fianna Hills goes through.
Okay, one more number, 8. That's the number that Arkansas Razorback football is trying to avoid tomorrow morning because it would be an 8th straight loss, the longest in program history. Any predictions?
I think they're going to hit the number.
I have never heard so much resignation in your voice before.
Well, I'm sorry, but, you know, that is the home of, obviously, the Miracles on Markham. Mm. So will we get another one? It'd be nice.
Okay. Michael Tilley is a football realist as well as the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com. Michael, won't talk to you again until after Thanksgiving. Happy holidays to you.
Well, happy holidays to you, and I hope you're able to say you were wrong on your prediction.
Okay. Thank you, Michael.
All right. Later.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night, beginning at 10 p.m. On the Friday edition of the show, we'll hear from guitarist Peter Leach, tenor saxophonist Harold Land, and vibraphonist Warren Wolf. Also, the legendary Yusef Lateef from his The Blue Yusef Lateef recording. All this and much more on the Friday edition of Shades of Jazz.
This is Ozarks at Large. Make it 4 parties now qualified for the 2014 Arkansas ballot. The Green Party has been certified for the general election next year after the Secretary of State's office confirmed that the Green Party had collected enough valid signatures to be included in next year's voting. Earlier this fall, the Libertarian Party joined the Republicans and Democrats for ballot status. Late last week, I talked to Mark Swaney. He's the coordinator of the Green Party of Arkansas, and asked him if he thought polls indicating near-record levels of dissatisfaction with incumbents will be reflected in votes cast for candidates from parties other than the Republican or Democratic Party.
I do canvassing, I do petitioning, and there were a lot of people who signed my petition this time around and said they were disgusted with both the major parties. But I don't expect there's going to be a sea change. There'll be some small leakage, I expect. But the problem with that is that people get cold feet at the last minute. They'll complain and they'll whine and they'll stomp around. And then when it gets right down before they vote, they generally vote conservative or liberal, however they think they are. And so that's why in times past there have been people who were disgusted with the two major parties, and it never has yet turned out to be a major leakage to some alternatives. That said, I think we're in the beginning of a multi-party system. It's in the very earliest phase of it, but I think that that'll eventually happen. I just don't think that it'll be dramatic changes this year or in the election next year.
You look at the races, Arkansas, after what was a relatively calm election cycle 2 years ago or in the 2012 election, you have an open gubernatorial race. You have a very competitive U.S. Senate race, some competitive open congressional seats. A lot of money is going to be coming into Arkansas. Can the Green Party be successful in getting its message out and letting people know that it is there?
Yes. I think that the answer to that is yes. But whenever you're talking about a minor party, you have to make caveats there and say, okay, it's not going to be the same as the major party. You won't see hordes of Green Party advertising on TV. We have other means of getting our message out, and we're going to do that as hard as we can, and we'll just have to wait and see. The Green Party, as well as the Libertarian Party, is not likely to elect a lot of people, but you can't win by not playing. And so we are going to be in the elections in 2014, and we're going to run as hard as we're able to run, and we'll see what happens.
You mentioned the Libertarian Party. They have achieved ballot status. In the 2014 election, if you get 3% of the votes cast in the gubernatorial election, you don't have to go through the petition process again. Do you think it helps or hurts having both Libertarian and Greens on there? Because now you're talking for both to get on in the 2016 ballot. 6% of voters in the gubernatorial election will have to, at a minimum of 6%.
Well, I think it's clear the mathematics says it's not going to be any easier with extra parties on. But we'll have to see how things go. I think that it's a good thing that the Libertarians are on the ballot. The Green Party doesn't have a whole lot of overlap with them. There are some issues that we agree with Libertarians, primarily in the area of personal liberties for individual persons. We probably agree with Libertarians on most of their issues. We tend to part company with Libertarians where they want to have no government regulations on corporations, as if they were people or if they were individual citizens. And we part company with them on that. But I welcome the presence of the Libertarians on the ballot. I think it's a healthy thing to have a multi-party system. It also does something to say that, well, you can't just talk about a third party. I hear this all the time, a third party, a third party. And that comes from the two-party dynamic. And everybody thinks a third party is this big, hairy monster that messes things up, spoils elections or whatever. Well, what about four parties? We actually will have four parties. What about five or six parties? Who knows where that will go? And so I think that having extra parties on the ballot tends to make people think a little more carefully before they just automatically assume that there's a third party in there like a crowbar levering the election one way or the other.
Going beyond the message of just not Democrats or Republicans, I had this conversation with a Libertarian representative a couple of weeks ago after they had been okayed for the ballot. What will you tell voters that, and knowing that each candidate inside each party is different, but what can the Green Party offer as an alternative to candidates from, say, generally the Democratic or Republican Party?
Or the Libertarians.
Or the Libertarians, or the Constitutional.
What I tell people is the Green Party is the only progressive party in Arkansas. And when I say that, sometimes Democrats get their feathers ruffled a little bit. A lot of Democrats are friends of mine. But the fact is the Democratic Party in Arkansas never supported gay marriage, and the Green Party always has. Fact is the Green Party is opposed to the death penalty in the state of Arkansas. You won't find Democrats who will say that as soon as they're elected governor, the first thing they're going to do is commute all death sentences to life without parole. And the biggest one, the major issue that will distinguish the Green Party from all of the other choices on the ballot will be climate change and the degradation of our environment. I see most of the races with candidates who are arguing with each other over who's more conservative. And I'm not going to go along naming a lot of names, but anybody that pays attention to Arkansas politics knows that this is true. I see basically the defeat of the Democratic Party in last year's election as being the death knell to the last of the last Dixiecrat Democrat parties. And every other Confederate state in America except Arkansas until now has gone hardcore to the right wing and to the Republicans. Arkansas was the last holdout where the Democratic Party had a kind of a lock on the politics. But they had managed to do that, in my estimation, by assiduously appealing to the conservative, social conservative votes particularly. And in so doing, they can't claim to be progressive in any sense. Clearly, the Republicans are not progressive, and I don't consider Libertarians to be progressive either. And so I think the Green Party is the only progressive political party in the state, and it's why that I work for the Green Party, because I am a progressive, and I think that's very important to have a choice on the ballot for progressives to be able to go to the polls and vote for someone that they really think agrees with their positions.
Mark Swaney is the state coordinator for the Green Party in Arkansas. This month, the party qualified to be on the 2014 ballot in Arkansas and is scheduled to hold a nominating convention in Little Rock in February.
We have a couple of updates on a pair of recent creative food drives. First-year architecture students at the University of Arkansas collected more than 2,500 cans of food for their annual Canstruction event. The cans were turned into pun-themed structures. More than 120 students on different teams built structures like Canverse, a Converse logo, shoe, and the word Canverse spelled out, which used 634 cans in all. Other creations include Pac-Can, a take on the Pac-Man character, Can-Cropolis, a structure styled like the Acropolis in Greece, and Arkansas, an outline of the state with cans. The more than 2,500 cans and packaged food items collected by the students were donated to the University of Arkansas Full Circle Campus Food Pantry and the Fayetteville Public Schools Outback, which operates a food pantry for students. The Fayetteville Public Library's Food for Fees annual food drive collected 2,300 pounds of canned and dried food goods for Cooperative Emergency Outreach and Feed Fayetteville. The food was delivered to the CEO's new location on Monday. Already in 2013, CEO has seen a 14% increase in the number of individuals needing assistance over the last year.
It is Friday, November 22nd, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I hate to do this. I really do.
And that is?
Because every time you talk about Christmas before Thanksgiving, a reindeer kicks an elf.
Okay. Could be worse, I suppose.
But if we don't talk about Christmas events today, you're going to miss out on two of the best ones. The lighting of the Fayetteville Square and the lighting of the Bentonville Square.
I'm really excited because I have plans to make it to one of them this year.
Okay. Have you never been?
No.
Oh, there's so much fun.
I know. And I've
just
never been.
Put the date
I
out
did.
Of your mind.
You're right.
And just go have a good time.
Yes.
Let me also say, if you really don't like to start Christmas things until after Thanksgiving, which is an admirable stance. You can just say this is holiday lighting.
That's where I'm going with
it. Oh, that's good.
Yes, I'm going with holiday lighting.
Because after all, not everybody celebrates Christmas.
Nope.
So this is very inclusive.
And it's very close to Hanukkah. So,
right.
Okay.
There we go.
And we're celebrating Thanksgiving early.
We're celebrating.
Holiday.
Yes.
Yes, seasonal lighting will begin at 6 o'clock Saturday.
But you can call it Christmas lighting if you want. I'm just saying. Okay, go ahead.
On the Fayetteville Square, with 500,000 LED lights, Jessica Leonard of Lights of the Ozarks says that the Parks and Rec workers who put in the 3,000 hours to do this are completely in control of the design, so what it looks like will be a surprise to everybody.
Now, I will say you can get the sneak preview if you drive to work early and it takes you past the square down
Kevin
Dixon
Kinder
Street.
Saw him the other night. That's great.
And it's kind of fun.
The parade. There's a parade
yes.
Saturday. Starts at 6 o'clock. As near as we can understand, it's not going to be like it used to be that the lights don't come on till Santa gets to the square.
Uh-huh.
Santa's going to leave the library about 6, and the parade goes down Mountain Street and around the square, and the lights are going to go on about 6.
Now,
so.
Doesn't the parade this year also include Dixon Street?
Yes, it does.
They've expanded the parade
route. Yes, it does. Down Block, down Dixon, and up West Avenue.
Sounds fun.
So
that almost sounded like you were calling out Santa's reindeer.
Down
on
Block.
Dixon, on Block. Yes, I digress. Go ahead.
Okay. From now till Christmas, the lights go on at 5 o'clock daily, and there's ponies and carriage rides and camel rides and holiday refreshments, and it's all great and fun. Downtown Bentonville has its lighting Saturday, also at 6 o'clock. There's events throughout the day, and then at 4 o'clock, things start on the Walton Arts Center main stage, and then at 6 o'clock, the lights go on.
And yes.
And there will be a tree lighting at the ice rink at Lawrence Plaza at 6:30, and the ice rink's open, so it's the holidays.
There you go.
Everywhere.
Yes.
Now, Springdale will have their 17th annual Christmas Parade of the Ozarks at 6 o'clock on the 30th.
So we can call that Christmas because it's post-Thanksgiving.
By golly, yes. We can.
Yes.
And it'll have Santa, too. He's everywhere this time of year.
It's a superpower.
Miracle. And downtown Rogers will have Santa at 5 o'clock on the 30th at the Holiday Hoopla kickoff.
Okay.
With a parade at 7 on December 2nd.
Mm-hmm. And then later we've got Eureka Springs with their parade.
Exactly. So from now until Christmas, we'll be talking about this a lot.
That's okay.
But the reindeer kicking will be over next week.
Right.
Also, Making Beautiful Music, the Art Center of the Ozarks Chorale is mm-hmm. performing tonight. But they're not calling it a Christmas concert.
Right.
There are lots of celebrations in it. They're going to do Carol Him Sweetly, which is a 20th century piece that includes a flute and a harp in addition to 40-plus voices. And they're going to do Vivaldi's Gloria.
Oh, that'll be fun.
7:30 today at ACO, and tickets are $7 to $12. Also this weekend, Alice in Wonderland Jr.
I've seen photos on social
media.
Mm-hmm. They look fantastic.
It's the Disney version, of course. It's 7:30 today, 2 and 7:30 tomorrow, and 2 on Sunday at the Continuing Ed Auditorium. This is, of course, Arts Live.
Right.
And tickets are $8 to $12. University Theater is wrapping up She Stoops to Conquer, a great manners play. That's at 8 today and tomorrow and 2 on Sunday. Tim Ernst is out and about showing off his new photos of the Buffalo River. Mm-hmm. 2 o'clock on Saturday at the Shiloh Museum and 2 o'clock on Sunday at the Fayetteville Public Library.
Mm-hmm.
Still on the Hill performs at 3 o'clock Saturday at the Bentonville Public Library.
Yes.
Or you could go out and see some eagles.
Yes.
Or possibly herons or kingfishers. It is Eagle Watch Tour time at Rocky Branch Marina, and that happens at 3 o'clock both tomorrow and Sunday. Tickets are $5 to $10. That's hosted by Hobbs State Park. You must have a reservation. Mm-hmm. 789-5000.
Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. Earlier this week, 25 members of the Bentonville Chamber Choir came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to perform selections from this year's Madrigal event. In a moment, we'll talk to three members of the choir and the director of choirs at Bentonville High School, Terry Hicks, about this year's performances, the last Madrigal concerts the Bentonville Chamber Choir will produce. But first, one of the songs the students sang for us inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
Cocks are crowing, though there is no dawning light, for the stars are brightly glowing in the Holy Land tonight. Oh, walk with me.
Not I, not I.
Oh, walk with me.
Not I, not I.
Oh, come now, oh, come now. Should I ne'er return again, sing the seven psalms in remembrance. Alack-a-day.
Alack-a-day.
Like a lonely wayward child, alone I go,
alone I go.
I must find rest
for you.
Oh, come now, good farmer, let me in for just one night. In the barn I would be sleeping. And if you don't, where can I go? If you're a kind, no rest, I'll find no rest, I'll find no rest, I'll find.
Us
is born a Savior, Saint Joseph too. Blessings on you. Let us unite in singing now to one we love, to one we love.
The 19th annual and final Bentonville High School Chamber Choir's Madrigal Dinner will be hosted by First Christian Church in Bentonville December 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. The evening includes music and food, and there is a Saturday matinee on December 7th. That's a dessert-only menu. In a few minutes, we'll hear more music from the Chamber Choir. But first, the choir's director, Terry Hicks, and three of the students in the Chamber Choir, Kayla Eldridge, Ashlyn Deaton, and Tony Dutton, sat down to talk to me about their preparation for the dinner. Terry Hicks says the traditions of the Madrigal Dinner are centuries old.
Basically, it's from the 15th century, and presentations of madrigal feasts nowadays basically are dinner theaters that typically have an eclectic amount of music from over the years. But the costuming and the typical menu is pulled from the 15th century.
The music that we'll be hearing from the Bentonville Choir from the 15th century?
You'll be hearing a few titles from the 15th century, but everything all the way up to some pretty contemporary things.
What is it about? You guys were so, you sounded so good in here. What is it about the blending of 25 voices that attracted you?
Just singing together, it's become very intimate. So you, the voices beside you, you just get to know. And
yeah, going along with the family element, that's why I joined chamber, is because I heard from everyone that was in it before me that, you know, you gain a family at Bentonville High School. In such a large school, you have that intimacy. So like she was saying, you just blend with everyone. You appreciate everyone's different tones and vocal qualities and talents, and you get to blend them all together in this amazing ensemble.
I guess pretty much the same thing as them. It's a great family. It's a lot of really nice people singing together, and sounds great, and you have great moments.
If you take a song, say it's something from a few hundred years ago that probably you've never heard before, that no one in the room, except maybe you, Terry, have heard performed. How long does it take to get that to where you want it to be presented to the public? Can you do it in an afternoon?
No way.
Okay.
It takes trying to get the choir to conceptualize the overall sound is, for me, one of the first pieces that has to be put in place. And we'll begin the Madrigal Feast music in August, but we focus on a few select pieces that I try to get them to really navigate their ears toward a certain sound and a certain blend and balance. And after we have that in place, then when we begin a piece, it really probably, if we were to just work on one piece, it would probably take us about 2 weeks, really, after we have that sound in place, that initial core sound. But this choir is learning 22 pieces for the Madrigal Feast, so we have a lot of pieces in this jigsaw puzzle to put together.
So if you have 22, August to December, that's about 4 months. Do you get settled with a couple, then try to put a couple more? Or are you, you know, from day one looking at all 22 and...
Very insightful. really, you know, again, as soon as I can get, you know, we begin work on all the pieces pretty much at the same time. We do a retreat. We do an evening, the first weekend of school. And we run through everything as much as possible, and we just, you know, note shed here and there and try to get everything learned as quickly as possible just to familiarize the pieces that they have before them. Then we focus on a couple, and then it's a matter of kind of evaluating as we go. I listen to a piece and I'll think to myself, okay, I need to put that one on the back burner for a little while we solidify some more things that are needed to put that one where it needs to be, and move another piece up that's a quicker learn. So it's always a little juggling and kind of moving things around to coordinate that we come to this culminating event just in time.
Are you all on the same page? Do you know if something is working or not? Can you tell from when you practice that, okay, that song's coming along? Or is Terry sort of your guide for that?
He's definitely our guide, but usually we can definitely tell when we're at our best and when we're not, if we're really clicking as a group in that moment to get a song done or if it's taking longer than it should. And if so, then we usually break off into sectionals during seminar and usually spend a lot of our own personal time learning the pieces.
It's pretty amazing to watch these kids and, you know, students that are that attuned to what we're trying to make as our final product. Come to me after rehearsal or before rehearsal or even during rehearsal and say, you know, and voice concerns about pieces. It's really amazing to hear the students come forward with that. And like Kayla said, for the students to pull in their own sectional, the responsibility of these students is just, I'm very proud of it.
I have an idea. I can't sing. I'm not musical at all, so I might be wrong. But I have an idea of what would be the most difficult thing. But I'm going to see if I'm right or I'm wrong. I would think timing, because there are certain pieces where you've all got to be there at the same time and you've all got to be done at the same time. Is timing one of the hardest things?
I wouldn't say timing per se. Rhythm is very important, and learning the notes is as well. But those kind of come with time. Whereas I think the most difficult is to truly bring depth to a piece and really perform it musically, whether to crescendo together as a group or to whether we all are connected in tune with what the piece truly is about. I think that's the hardest thing, because you can so easily get a choir to sing rhythms or pitch to a song, but truly bringing out the depth and having it mean something to each other in the choir and also impact an audience, I would say, is the most difficult.
I'm going to guess that it's even more difficult when you have 24 others that are with you. It's one thing
certainly.
For a solo or a four-piece, a quartet or a quintet, but if you've got 25 and you've got to all work together to find that depth, that would seem to raise the level of difficulty.
Right. We have to really collaborate a lot on the emotional pull we want to get from the audience, and all work together on what we need to be thinking of when we're performing the piece together as a group. And that takes a lot of time. Usually, you know, our first rehearsals on a song are not going to be there. But over time, when we really connect with a song, that tends to grow.
This is a wonderful tradition at Bentonville High. But in 2014, it won't be happening?
This is correct.
This is it?
This is it.
Any particular reason?
The Madrigal Feast, I began the Madrigal Feast to recruit students and to encourage students to join the chamber choir and to aspire to be in the chamber choir. When I first got to the high school, there were roughly 80 students in the choir program total. And it worked like a charm. I mean, the kids worked like crazy. They got really excited about it. The other kids caught the bug. They told their friends about it. And the number of students involved just exploded. We were at 300 before I knew it in the choir program. And this fall, we have over 640 kids in the – yeah, it's a lot. We have over 640 kids in the choir program at Bentonville High School. And so now the problem that I've run into, starting about 8 or so years ago, is I have students that are graduating that are now disassociated from chamber choir far enough that they don't even know what Madrigal Feast is, and they even go to Bentonville High School. Mm-hmm. So the design of doing the Madrigal Feast, we went past its purpose. And so starting about 3 or so years ago, I started brainstorming about what would be replacing it and how can I replace it and should I replace it. And obviously, I decided that it needed to be replaced with something that is going to be more inclusive. I'm looking at beginning something next fall or next Christmas time with something that's going to include roughly about half of our students in the choir program. And that way, nearly a majority of the students in choir at Bentonville High School will feel like they all are part of something that is incredibly special. So as we change direction, that's my biggest concern, is making sure that our quality stays what it has been and that the program continues to thrive on our programs.
You're being somewhat secretive here. Is that on purpose?
Little.
Okay, that's fine. But you're going to do this last one of price. You've got alums, people who have sung in the past coming back?
That is going to be, for me personally, that is going to be one of the most incredibly special nights, because I have, from the very first Madrigal, 1994, I have the first queen, Stephanie Katush, is going to come and join us. And it's to see the students from that year, and there's multiple, not just Stephanie, but a number of the students from that first year, and then to see kids get on Facebook and messaging and getting incredibly excited. I've got one student flying in from Hawaii, another one flying in from New York, and another flying in from California to be there to support the last Madrigal.
Tickets still available?
Tickets are still available.
If people do want tickets?
They go to www.bentonvillechoirs.com, and there's a link right there on that page.
Terry Hicks is the director of choirs at Bentonville High School, and Kayla Eldridge, Ashley Deaton, and Tony Dutton are members of the Bentonville Chamber Choir and will be singing at the 19th and final Bentonville High School Madrigal Feast. Here are all 25 members of the Chamber Choir participating in the Madrigal Dinner, as recorded inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
So blessed a sight it was to see how many
December 5 and a 20, thump, thump, thump. For a blessed babe was born upon this day at break of morn. In a manger poor and lowly lay the Son of God most holy, thump, thump, thump. For a blessed babe was born upon this day at break of morn. In a manger poor and lowly lay the Son of God most holy, thump, thump, thump. On December 5 and a 20, thum, thum, thum. On December 5 and a 20, thum, thum, thum. Now may all our voices raise and sing a song of grateful praise. Celebrate in song and story all the wonders of his glory, thum, thum, thum. May all our voices raise and sing a song of grateful praise. Celebrate in song and story all the wonders of his glory. Foom, 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 foom.
The Bentonville Chamber Choir will present its Madrigal Dinner at First Christian Church in Bentonville, December 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. You can learn more at bentonvillechoirs.com.
One afternoon, two Mormon missionaries visited the comedian Julia Sweeney.
And they said they had a message for me. From God. I said, well, please, come in. And they looked really happy because I don't think this happens to them all that often.
I'm Guy Raz. Faith, belief, and doubt. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Listen Sunday at noon to KUAF Public Radio.
Today, of course, marks the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas. Throughout this month, there have been interviews, reports, and commemorations regarding one of the darkest days in American history. 50 years ago, the rest of the world took notice, too. The BBC devoted hours of special coverage to the assassination, but on the day after, which would have been nighttime in Britain, the BBC switched away from its special coverage to air the premiere of a new program called Doctor Who. Nearly 800 episodes and 11 different actors later, the show is something of a British treasure. Tomorrow, at precisely 50 years to the second that the first Doctor Who episode premiered, groups will be gathered around the globe to watch the new season of the program premiere. One of those parties will be at 28 Springs in downtown Siloam Springs. The event begins Saturday morning at 11 and will include British pub food and drinks, some games, a trivia contest, and more. Sean Hunt of Siloam Springs will be attending.
I am what you call a Whovian.
A Whovian?
Yes. It definitely has its own name.
What?
You're not a Doctor Who fan. You're a Whovian.
What led to you becoming a Whovian?
I don't know. I guess when I was a kid, I watched reruns of the fourth Doctor. I think he's one of the best ones. And I just fell in love with the sci-fi and the cheesiness and the dedication of the set designers with having, you know, no budget and all creativity. That's what I like the best about it.
What now, for the uninitiated, those of us who maybe have only seen a couple of episodes or people who haven't seen any, you mentioned the cheesiness. I mean, this has not been a show, at least for much of its run, that has been known for high production values, right?
Right.
But it's
more the quality of the relationship between the actors.
There aren't many shows, if any, that have had the main character rotate as often. How does that work?
He actually what they call regenerates. So he can only live so long, and then when he dies, he regenerates. I think it was a brilliant stroke of brilliance on the director's part. Because when the ratings get low with the Doctor, you just swap him out.
That does work, and that's why it's been on for 50 years.
I'm pretty sure that's how it came about. I couldn't swear to that, but...
Now, the Doctor time travels, correct?
Correct.
And how does he do that?
In the TARDIS.
And what is the TARDIS?
It's a police box. It's a British police box, a big blue kind of phone booth-looking thing. You really haven't ever watched it, have you?
No, I haven't. I mean,
you should.
The arch enemies are Daleks. Daleks, and they're these little robot-looking things, correct?
They're quite big, actually.
Oh.
And if you should at least Google one to appreciate it. The initial one was basically an inverted trash can with all kinds of scrap glued to it that, you know, to make it look sinister. And I'm pretty sure initially it was a toilet plunger for a nose.
There's ingenuity at work here.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's when I started watching it, was when the Daleks first came out. And, of course, I was watching reruns by then, but I was just amazed. You know, you could recognize that it was pieces and parts of the warehouse that they'd found to film in, and it was just, and they made it move, and they gave it a funny voice with a microphone. And
well, I guess happy 50th anniversary, and thank you for your time.
Well, are you going to come?
I don't know if I'd be allowed. I mean, I'd be walking in so uninitiated. So
oh, that's okay. It would be a great initiation. I'll buy you a beer. They'll have all the British pub fare and special beers that Casey's imported. It'll be pretty fun.
Sean Hunt talked to me from her business, Innuendo's Design Shop in Siloam Springs. She'll be at the 50th celebration of Doctor Who at the 28 Springs Bar and Restaurant in downtown Siloam Springs tomorrow. The event begins at 11 a.m. and has a $5 cover charge attached. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Alma.
And let's see, Sunday morning at 9, Christine and I will be together for weekend Ozarks at Large.
Yep.
Went to the T2 gala last night.
How was it?
It was fantastic.
Awesome.
Really good.
Didn't make it this year. Went last year and had a good time.
It was at the town center this year. Mm-hmm. It was 50 more people in attendance, I think, than last year. So it continues to grow.
And they're doing a Christmas carol soon.
They are. That is in rehearsal now.
Awesome.
Actually. And this raised money last night for their educational efforts going into schools all over the state.
Very cool.
Yes. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Doing anything this weekend? I know the answer to that.
Yes, of course.
You're going to see some lights turned on somewhere?
That's my plan. That's
you know
plan.
Where yet?
I think the Fable Square.
Okay. I'll see you there. Have a great weekend.